I'm Carol Hills, and you're listening to The World. We're a co-production of the BBC World Service, PRI, and WGBH Boston. Today, we begin a special week-long look at women's rights, and we're going to focus on India. You can follow our coverage on social media. Just follow the hashtag #HerRights. And let's go right to Mumbai. The World's Marco Werman is there with reporter Ritu Chatterjee, an old friend of the show. They're going to take the helm for the next few minutes, so take it away, guys.
Thank you, Carol.
Thanks a lot, Carol. I love big cities, and Mumbai is huge. It's supercharged. Everyone is busy, going somewhere, doing something. You might be a banker. You might be sweeping a few square feet of sidewalk. You might be a schoolgirl. And Ritu, we could have chosen to go to any part of the world to look at her rights, but we chose India. You know, there are the tragic headlines, the gang rape and murder of a young woman on a city bus in New Delhi 3 years ago, and in a way, that's restarted a fresh conversation about women's safety around the globe.
That's right. Now, after the Delhi gang rape, thousands of ordinary citizens, women and men, stepped out onto the streets of Delhi and other cities and demanded laws and regulations to make India safer for girls and women. And the sheer outrage of that moment, the raw emotion of people who were out on the streets, really struck a chord with people around the world. And in the last 2 years, I've seen that conversation go beyond women's safety to every aspect of women's lives.
So let's just start with this idea. I think that for most people in the U.S., someone has a baby and you ask, girl or a boy? But here in India, the answer to that question, girl or boy, is seriously loaded, right? Talk about that a bit.
Now, this wasn't the case in my family. They were overjoyed when I was born, especially since I was the first girl in two generations. But many families in India don't want to have a girl because a daughter is something they consider paraya dhan, which means another man's wealth, meaning her real home is the home of her husband's. And when she goes there after getting married, she's going to take a fat dowry with her. A son, on the other hand, remains with the family. He brings his wife home. He carries on the family's name and keeps the family property within the family. So a son is a boon, a daughter an economic liability. And these days, couples, especially those with some means, who only want to have one or two children, they want to make sure they have at least one son.
Wow. So how do those couples make sure they have at least one son?
It's called female feticide, or if you want to be more technical, sex-selective abortion. Families pressure pregnant women to find out the gender of the baby with an ultrasound, and if it's a girl, they get an abortion.
So the story you're about to tell us is about one woman who's devoted her entire life to saving unborn girls. Let's hear about her and what she does.
Varsha Deshpande is a force of nature. She lives to fight for the lives of Indian girls. I met her in her home in the city of Satara, a few hours south of Mumbai. It's Sunday afternoon, but she's working. She sits at a table in her living room with some colleagues. Deshpande and her colleagues are organizing a workshop in another city. The goal is to teach public health workers and officials about female feticide, and in particular, the Indian law that prohibits doctors from telling parents whether they are having a boy or a girl.
The doctor has right to say it, but not to disclose the sex of the fetus by words, by any sign, by any way, by any means, like emailing or anything.
But many doctors continue to do this anyway. It's led to millions of female fetuses aborted over the decades.
We see it as a genocide. It is the attack on women's race in India.
That's why Deshpande has doggedly fought to save girls who would otherwise never be born. She targets doctors who do illegal sex determination. And her most powerful ammunition in this fight has been pregnant women themselves. Since 2004, Deshpande has conducted sting operations to catch doctors with the help of pregnant women. Women like Prerna Bhilare, who has known Deshpande for many years. Bhilare says ever since she got married, Deshpande would jokingly say to her, "All right, now you're married. When you're pregnant, you must do sting operations for me." And Bhilare says she was happy to oblige when she got pregnant in 2010. She went to a clinic in another part of the state with three of Deshpande's colleagues. They pretended to be her relatives. They told the clinic staff that her in-laws were pressuring her to have only one child, a boy. Could the doctor please find out the gender of her baby? Bhilare says the doctor did an ultrasound. He handed her a report and told her in person she needn't worry. It was a boy, and everything looked good. Pillari left the clinic and reported the doctor to the local authorities. In the following weeks, she participated in 3 more sting operations. Her testimony led to 3 convictions, including of a physician couple, Dr. Sudam Munde and his wife, Dr. Saraswati Munde, who earlier this summer were sentenced to 3 years in prison. But getting the conviction wasn't easy, says Deshpande. First off, it took a long time.
It took almost 3 years for us, and it was a life threat many a time for us. For 6 months, I was given the protection by the police.
The Mundes had money and powerful political connections. And that's true for many such doctors who pay off officials and politicians, Deshpande says.
There is a huge corruption and political interference.
But it's worth it, Deshpande says, because these convictions get noticed.
He's a doctor who has been kept behind bars. So it gives a very strong message to the rest of the state.
And in the process, it also saves thousands of girls. Still, Deshpande knows she can only go after so many doctors on her own. Ultimately, she says the government has to get serious about cracking down on the practice. And that means more than dads tweeting selfies with daughters. Something India's Prime Minister has urged as a way to show the value of girls.
The girls who have gone eliminated, how are we going to take selfie with them? I have to ask this to our Prime Minister.
The law against sex selection is clear, is Deshpande's point. It just needs to be implemented.
But if they implement by next 5 years, by 2021, India's face will be something different. India will be safe for the women.
In another part of Deshpande's house, Prerna Bhilare, the woman who worked as a pregnant decoy, plays with her son, who's now 4 years old. She asks him to recite a poem. She loves her son, but she'd have been just as happy with a daughter.
She'd have been just as happy with a girl. Wow. So these are well-to-do couples. What about most people who are poor and can't get that illegal ultrasound for a sex determination? Are they also trying to eliminate daughters?
No, Marco. Like you said, if you're poor, you can't afford an ultrasound. And if you're living in a village, you don't have access to it anyway. And also, if you're poor and uneducated, you probably want to have many children because whether they're girls or boys, they can help you at work and help you make some extra money. Mm-hmm. Plus, you're not going to be asked for a big fat dowry anyway if you're not well off. So this is almost exclusively an urban phenomenon and one that's more common among the middle and upper middle class.
So how bad does this get?
The statistics are pretty shocking. We've posted an explainer video online at PRI.org.